non-benders alike, welcome to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatarverse. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco.
And last week, of course, we recapped episode 6 of The Last Airbender and got to reconnect with the wonderful Kevin Michael Richardson.
And in this episode, we are joined by not one, but two incredible guests.
Yes, indeed, my friend. So I feel like in past episodes of Braving the Elements of the podcast, you and I have already made it like extremely clear that while we both have a bit of a background in dance, I mean, definitely you more than me, I've had a little martial arts training, and by a little, I mean a little. Dante, remind me, have you had any training in martial arts?
I'm an orange belt in the style of Kajin Kenbo. Orange belt, Barney.
All right.
Respect the orange belt. You guys, the guests, don't laugh. I see you laughing.
Listen, it's okay. First of all, yes, wear your orange belt with pride. But second of all, whole point of all of this is just kind of me establishing that, like, we've made it clear that neither one of us are going to be, you know, busting any of Zuko and Korra's moves in real life anytime soon, or possibly anytime in the future, period. Right? I mean, that's fair.
I've taken some kickboxing classes, and I was looking kind of sexy. I had, like, a spinning... flying spinning kick, that was really sexy. I feel good about
it. Yeah, I like a flying spinning kick. I also feel sexy when I am doing those moves. I at no time felt that way when we were recording because anything that I tried to approximate that was even close to any kind of move involved me knocking against the microphone or like bonking my face into it and generally being laughed at by the people behind the glass when we were recording. So we are not the martial arts experts that we might like to be. We are very lucky that we do have the main two minds behind how the show looked the way that it did as far as all of the bending, the fighting, the martial arts goes.
I want to get down to the dirty of like each element, each style, where it comes from.
Yeah, a small, small task. We are going to be informed, educated, and wowed by none other than Brian Konietzko and Sifu Kisu. Hello, welcome.
Yes, so good to see both of you guys.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for having us. I also have to be clear, I am not a martial arts expert, and so that has to be gotten out of the way early. But
if I made it sound like you were an expert in terms of every move as represented by our show, then I agree that I misspoke. However,
I just want to be clear. I don't need people challenging me on the streets or anything. So I just had to get that out of the way. I'm a brittle little human.
So, I have an orange belt. If you need me, Brian, I heard about that orange belt. I'm packing that orange belt and I'm ready to rock. It's Fire Nation color, and I just stopped at orange. That's what I decided.
Brian's got a black belt and pencil.
Maybe a blue belt. But yeah. But what you said is accurate. I mean, Kisu and I worked together with many of the other artists and animators to visualize the martial arts and the bending in the Avatar world. And as an animator, as a storyboard artist, and as a co-showrunner with Mike, you know, I was very much curating the movement. And that's actually how I found Kisu.
What was the process like? Like, okay, you've gotten a green light for the pilot. By the time that happened, had you already sort of had a sense of like, I'm going to need to do this. I'm going to need to research it. I'm going to need to know what we're talking about. Or had you already kind of started marinating on all of that, Brian?
We met when you were developing, right?
Yeah, we weren't even at the pilot stage. One of the first things I did, you know, just having worked on a few animated projects, you know, series before we got to create Avatar. There was a trend to, I think there's montages on YouTube of like how many animated shows and properties have copied that one motorcycle slide from Akira, you know, like Turtles and everybody has done that thing. And, you know, there was a tendency when a show did have martial arts, there was no framework in place to get movement. You know, original movement for that animation. And so the animators, who are generally just kind of fans and nerds of, you know, pop culture stuff, would just take some, oh, this is my favorite clip from some famous movie, and then try to draw the characters doing that movement. And I was like, that might be okay for a one-off or like a tribute, an homage, like, hey, I want you to know that I am quoting this Jackie Chan movement or something. I knew that we could not do a series that way, and I didn't want to. I wanted this to be a Kung Fu series. In order to do that, very soon after we pitched it to Nickelodeon, even before we had a contract, I said, okay, well, I'm going to be the Robert De Niro of TV animators and go train this myself because I wanted to understand the movement. And knowing as an animator, even you don't have to be a master of these things, but you have to at least have felt it. You have to understand some body mechanics. I was very into yoga at the time, and I had grown up doing martial arts and really loved it when I was young.
What belt are we talking, Brian? What belt are we talking?
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Here's the thing. Kisu and I talked about the belt system back in the day, and I don't want to...
It's not great. I'm with you. It's not great. It's not a great system.
We don't need to get in. We don't need to get into all that, but I will say that my strip mall school gave me a belt far higher than I probably deserved as an 11-year-old. Twig.
Strip mall school.
Did you train with Master Wu?
I trained, yeah, sort of. No. And what directly led me to find Kisu is that subtlety is probably the most difficult thing for us to convey in the animation. It's so hard on a TV schedule and budget and with all the episodes overlapping to convey like really subtle animation. You know, things tend to be broad and need to be to read. So knowing the little bit I knew about different martial arts styles, I thought we needed one that was very balletic, very big, dynamic, really big changes between the poses so that this could read. So initially, I was not thinking of four different styles for each element. I was just thinking...
Wow, that's...
Yeah, I was thinking we just need something that's going to read, you know, really clearly and be really strong. So in researching different styles from a layperson's outside perspective, I learned about Northern Shaolin, and I thought, okay, I think this fits the bill. You know, I think this is just so explosive and dynamic, and it's really going to read. And so I was in Los Angeles, and I looked up a few teachers who advertised that they taught this or taught similar styles and talked with a few of them. But here's the thing. I didn't just need a martial arts master, I needed someone who could be creative with it, who could come with us on this imaginative journey and think of these arts, these traditional historic arts, in a creative manner. I met a few interesting characters, and my roommate and I went and tried out
of bad experiences too.
Yeah, we went to a strip mall school where this guy thought, oh yeah, I'll impress you by beating you guys up. He and his, like, black belt, you know, top students, like, kind of roughed us up and then shoved us into the back office and tried to force us to sign contracts and stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, this one's not going to work out. And then Bakisu was training in his backyard. And I was like, I'm going to go check this out. You know, I feel like this person is really interesting. And he has an interesting background. And he actually has worked in entertainment. And so I went and trained in his backyard with this small, dedicated group of students. And for weeks, months, I didn't really bring up the show. I might have, like, kind of mentioned it, but we didn't really talk about it. It was really, I was just there to be a student and learn.
And Kisu, can you give us what was happening with you and what your background was, kind of, and then we'll just sort of join up to the two of you meeting and starting the process?
It's interesting because I was probably in the purest state ever as a martial artist at that time, because we had just closed the one school that we had struggled to keep open. You know, L.A., the rents and the dynamics of Los Angeles are just insane sometimes. And I was training really, really, really hard. And Brian came to the class. You had actually talked about the show a couple of times, but he really got my attention because he was so dedicated and picked up the material. And the material is not easy. And he had a good memory, and he paid his dues on time.
Huge.
And also, Brian, I don't know if you know, but I did also take some classes with Sifu Kisu in the park through my boy, Adam Gifford, Adam G. Shout out to Adam G., who was studying with Kisu for a while, and I went out there, took a few classes before this even happened. I was like, oh my god,
that's so cool.
Kisu. So he's Kisu's like kind of like a local LA legend to some degree.
I did not know that. I was enjoying it, and it was helping me really get into the mindset of you know, how we might bring this art form into our art form and how we might pull this off in TV. And so at a certain point, you know, I had some more kind of artwork depicting the bending. And when we had our, Keisha and I sat down after class and had our first creative meeting, you know, my hunch that this person could be creative with this and imaginative paid off right away. He saw it, he got it, and he was like, you know, Aang could create tornadoes and this and that. And then Keisha was, you know, as we have said many times, is the person who said, we should use a different style for each element. And he understood my concern about, you know, the subtlety issues. And so he curated the main styles that we would assign to each culture, you know. And the idea was that, sure, these fantastical cultures were inspired by real world cultures, but they were not allegories for them. They were not direct representations of them. And the idea was that these cultures had grown up, had developed around an element, as the element was sort of their defining characteristic. And sure, within that culture, there are all sorts of people and personalities. And but we wanted the element to sort of the bending to reflect that. And Keisu was the one that really put that together with, you know, Tai Chi for water and Bagua for air. And we used Hungar for earth and later Southern praying mantis for Toph, and then we kept the Northern Shaolin for the Fire Nation because that seemed like a really good fit. Now there was, you know, we borrowed across the lines and from other martial arts as well, but those were the main sort of kind of assignments.
Brian and I had talked about in the, I guess, Chinese martial art and medical theory about the five elements theory of earth, air, water, fire, wood. We talked about metal early on too, before Toph had fully developed. I want to mention Master Manuel Rodriguez, who did the stuff for Toph. And I introduced Brian to him a couple of times. I think he had smacked Brian in the chest or something. Brian was like, hey, this guy's good.
Well, when we brought people in, and when Keisha was there, I didn't want any of the other animators getting hurt.
Right.
So I would just volunteer. So I got beat up by everybody.
And he got hurt a couple of times too by accident.
Keisha, did you have an opinion about how martial arts were being represented in TV and film? And had you seen it in animation before? Like, was that something you came in with opinions on? Or was it really about the inception of this concept with Brian?
I actually had a lot of opinions. And the thing that attracted me most about Brian showed me his storyboards for the pencil test. And the angles that they were drawn and the perspectives that they were drawn were so inspiring that I was like, wow, if I was an artist, I would have drawn it this way. And he caught my attention right away, and I could see that he had a vision. And let me, before I answer that question, let me be clear here. The true martial art force behind this entire thing is Brian. Brian had a vision that he wanted to see. We kind of articulated that together.
Thank you.
And when we were talking about this, and Brian talked about all the detail he wanted to do, and people that don't know, that's really animation intensive, right? And I think what animators get the same amount per page in some places to animate just the most simplest thing. And so to draw these details of someone standing, someone stepping, someone taking a breath. I don't, we talked about breathing. I don't think that had ever been
a lot
in anything. Yeah. And so we incorporated all these elements and took this time. People don't really understand the time. There was a lot of work. I'm kind of a happy-go-lucky, you know, easygoing guy. And Brian he's one of the hardest workers I've ever met. I mean, he was, you know, doing 14, 18-hour days in the beginning on Avatar. And you go, brother.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I'll get more into the actual, like, consultation process and how we broke that down. But I'm now remembering, that pencil test, that was something I was working on with some friends. And it was, again, I think it was before we had our contract signed. Mm-hmm. And that was my first, I had been studying with Keisu for several months by this point. And this was my attempt to take what I had learned in the class and to translate it into animation. And these weren't just storyboards. We fully animated this scene. And it honestly, it felt like, because I was such a new student to this martial art and I had not drawn martial arts before very much, I felt like I was writing an essay in a language I barely knew. Like, I felt like I was in intro to Spanish and I had to write a full essay. And so it was a huge challenge for me. But I really paid attention to everything Kisu taught, and not just movement and oh, this is how you do this move correctly, but all of the concepts behind it. And these are the things that I wanted to weave into the not only the animation, but into the storytelling. And so eventually down the road, getting these concepts across to the writers and the storyboard artists and the animators was really a big part of it. And to be clear, like, especially in the first season when we were just trying to get everything worked out and trying to get everyone on the same page. I mean, I watch a lot of that early animation, and it's pretty rough, and I'm surprised people like our show and think the martial arts is cool, because there's a lot of them that fell very far short of our goals. But I think, you know, the further you get along, it starts to work itself out and starts to become really cool. But one thing we did was for a little while, we had Kisu come and teach the artists. So he was teaching in the Nickelodeon gymnasium. We had like this in-house layout team. And again, I wanted the artists to feel what these poses felt like. And that informs your drawing. You'll draw things differently if you have a muscle memory, you know, if you have some body awareness. And that'll keep it from just being generic stuff that's kind of just copied off the TV.
That definitely made a difference at that point.
Yeah. And Dante, you said you kind of remembered Kisu being around and the conversations about
that. I remember Kisu being around, and I also remember talking about martial arts while we were doing the show, talking about yoga. We were talking about the different things we were studying. So it was a very different kind of experience, because all these elements were around and we were actually discussing them. And you know, again, even as an actor, it influences what you're doing acting-wise. And so it's just one of those kind of fascinating things how Brian, you kind of put it all together. And when I talk about the show and people talk about Asian representation and ethically, the way Mike and Brian approached is what we really want is with some respect and going about it and being detailed about what you're doing and not coming from a place of like, you know it all, or you're trying to just put your perspective on this world. And the conversations that we had through the whole kind of like even recording, we would have these conversations on the side and whatnot. So I love that. And I've also been to cons with Kisu there, without Kisu there, where people were talking about the martial arts and how detailed. I remember one fan was telling me, I guess they're a student of Tai Chi, and they were explaining the breathing like you guys were talking about. And I believe it was while he was opening the gates of the air temple. And they're like, I've never seen anyone do Tai Chi. Like, that was our Tai Chi. And I was like,
well, the
amazing. Like,
that whole idea, and thank you, by the way, Dante, but that this notion that, you know, this concept that hopefully came up again and again in the show. And you know, I know Iroh says it at one point, but about the breathing, I mean, that was what Kisu and I early meetings where we talked about what this would be like. And I probably talked about how the idea is that bending in this world is not magic. We kind of exemplified that worldview through Sokka very early in the first episode, where he kind of writes it off as magic water and Katara corrects him. It was a way to sort of get this bit of exposition, you know, of the way it's perceived.
Process.
Yeah, there's process, and that the Kisu always talked about it. This energy has to come from, he always said, comes from,
goes to
the point that Giancarlo would joke, and he'd go, comes from, goes to, comes from. But we always said, like, the energy can't just come from nowhere. And that was a big, you know, though I loved Lord of the Rings and stuff like Harry Potter, the magic in that world, there weren't any clear rules, and I didn't understand
where
was this energy coming from.
Yeah.
Why could one wizard tap into more energy than another? They just seemed to be reciting a word and pointing a wand. It seemed more like a gun to me. So we wanted to make it more that it was a physical process. It was very much the elements, like these physical things. And so Kisu really instilled this idea that all movement, all intention has to start with a breath. And that was how they gathered their chi, or their, you know, their ki, whatever it is, their energy, their life force energy, and then direct it somewhere. And then we talked about how that energy had to actually emanate from their body. It had to radiate out from their body. They couldn't just look at a mountaintop or even imagine a mountaintop halfway across the world and just cause it to fall down. They had to actually extend their energy to that element in front of them. And the now you could say, well, someone like Toph, who is a greater, more powerful bender than others, she is able to exert more of her energy further away for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And but this is, again, there's no bottomless resource of this. They are corporeal human organisms. They get tired. Yeah. They get hurt. You know, maybe they didn't have their morning coffee. they all of these things will impede their bending. It is a physical process, you know, and we so we tried to keep it away from being too magical. And so a lot of that came to the breath and to this the physical process. And Kisu would say, even if a firebender's just gonna, you know, make a little torch, it's not just a snap of the finger, you know, it's gotta like come from somewhere in the body and result in that. So that was the thought process. Getting everyone to get on board with this is another story. You know, it's very challenging in a TV production, but I think mostly somewhat pulled it off.
Listen, I will say you did, to the untrained eye at least, and I know Dante agrees with me, but I feel like that's established absolutely in the first episode. We already have a sense of the rules of the world. We see Aang, I mean, even if we don't know what it is yet, we see Aang's exhaustion after the Avatar state. We see Iroh talking about breaking someone's root. You just feel the kinetic and dynamic energy of all of that stuff so early on. And I mean, just as another example, like Omashu or Imprisoned, when you see earthbending for the first time, when you feel like you get chills, right, Dante? I mean, we talk about it. It's like when you see all that, you're just totally. Like the first time you see any of the bending, you're like, like there's a gasp because you feel it happening.
Yeah, and it's amazing that you guys are talking about it now. That's what the whole Avatar world's about and how that manifests through these martial arts. And it's really, now it's going to be very interesting how we watch the rest of the episode.
I agree.
Because now I'm like looking at it from another
absolutely
base. I mean, you guys, I have an orange belt, so I was already getting some of it.
You were already inner circle. You were with.
I was already in the orange belt phase of it, but now we're leveling up.
Yeah.
We revealed all the secret essences of martial arts in this little show. One of the other things that made this very unique is we amassed this huge collection of reference. Just all these photographic sessions and all these video sessions of the stance work and the transitions between the stances and how geometries would you know, lend to a sense of drama, right? But my teacher, before he met Mike and Brian, he said, were these guys Asian? And he thought that a couple of young Asian guys had done this because of all the various spiritual elements and the attention to detail. And I introduced him to Mike and Brian. He's like, I was really surprised.
Yeah, we didn't want to. It's done so poorly and so disrespectfully so often that I think people think it can't be done well or better. And if people just don't try to other these things, they don't try to other people and other their cultures and other their arts and just try to understand and to respect them. I'm not saying we're perfect or everything we did was perfect, but at least it shows that there are ways for people to talk about other cultures and to work with that in a creative way. I would hope. It was always really beautiful when, you know, Mike and I had our own goals for Avatar and our kind of concept, and it was enriched by so many people, writers and artists and consultants like Kisu. But it was also really neat when a concept that we might have had was mirrored in something really traditional and beautiful. And one example was, you know, at its core, the idea of the Avatar world is that the Avatar is not an all supreme being from birth. You know, this is a human each time, and this human is flawed. And though that person might be uniquely talented and prodigious, they have to relearn these things. It is not just given to them. This knowledge is not just given to them. This is the journey, the cycle of the Avatar. This person is reborn and does have the sort of benefit of this regenerated life, but has to and can tap into that deep power. But as you see with Aang, can't necessarily control it. And so Kisu and I talked about this early on, and you know, especially at this time, there were things in popular media where, you know, someone just downloads Kung Fu. I know Kung Fu now, you know, and and that was the antithesis of what we wanted to do. You had to earn it. You had to learn it. Mm. And so,
and be a
one
human,
specific
experience
place
humanity.
One specific place we got to actually like really focus on that was the episode Bitter Work. That came from Kisu teaching us like that one of the, maybe, I don't know, maybe not literal translations, but one of the meanings of Kung Fu is bitter work. It is not this magic. It is not this, oh, if you just have this knowledge, all of a sudden you have this power. It is, you have to internalize these things. You have to work through these lessons. And so that was something we wanted to get across to the audience, especially a young audience, is that these are not just magical superheroes who were just born, you know, powerful. They have to earn these things.
That's so beautiful. And that comes through so well.
There were some amazing outgrowths from this series. One of the most surprising, people started to contact me, I think when the show was in its second season. And I had traditional teachers reaching out to me going, we don't know who you are, but for the first time in the history of our school, we have children in the Tai Chi class. Mm. And then, you know, I've had That's people awesome. Come up to me at different cons and, you know, contact me in email and tell me how, you know, they started their martial art training career because of what they saw in Avatar. Or, you know, I've had people tell me about all sorts of traumatic experiences from their life where they saw this show and they were, you know, it gave them direction, you know, to move back. So it's been an amazing experience to be involved with this.
That's really beautiful. That's awesome to hear.
We hear that too. Those cons are the great times to have those experiences where, I mean, yeah, I could not count how many people have said that their entire perspective of their own body, their fitness, their confidence, all of that, and the way that they devoted themselves to having a better relationship with their body through martial arts, that all came out of Avatar, out of Aang and Korra and everybody else. It's mind-blowing. It's so emotional.
You know, Korra and Katara inspired a lot of young women to start practicing self-defense, which, you know, again, I get all of this amazing feedback from, you know, the world at large about this experience. So I think we've contributed to society.
For sure.
Understatement.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. If we go through the styles and the elements, so let's just break it down so me and Janet are crystal clear. The next time someone asks us, we know exactly what to say. So
I love it.
Of course, we'll start with the airbender, Aang, and airbending.
I can't believe you didn't start with fire. I love you, buddy. I think you're really growing. You're really growing. A lot of growth happening.
Oh, we're going to get to that fire. We're going to get to that fire. Let's start with that airbender. The air comes from Bagua.
Loosely.
That was the hardest. I will say that was the hardest one.
And because Bagua is more flowy.
Very spiral, right?
Spiraling, circling. It's built on the model of the yin and yang, surrounded by the eight trigrams. And the eight trigrams are a clock, more or less, that chart from the soft to soft to the hardest heart, from substantial to insubstantial, right?
Yes, right. That's right.
Okay. The circle walking is represented by the eight steps around the outside of the yin and yang. And then the yin and yang represents when you're standing still and you know, projecting to the outside of the circle. It's very complex. It's very esoteric. It's very mathematical in nature. It's a compass. It's a chart to organize your home. It's what's the word? Geomancy.
Yeah, like the.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was the most obscure of the arts. Like, it was the least, you know, known to a Western audience, I would say, at least myself. And it was, for me, the most interesting one because, you know, I had never heard it. I had never heard of it. I had never seen it. it was so interesting. And I thought, wow, what a cool, unique discipline. And it made so much sense for Aang and his people because they really wanted to avoid conflict. So it was very much about evading, just sort of like neutralizing offense and spinning, redirecting and getting out of the way. It wasn't about meeting a force head on. The challenge was, I mentioned it a minute ago, it was the most difficult for the artists and the animators. And I we might have gotten a move here and there that I think got good, but anytime we tried to depict the circle walking, this is like feature animation level stuff, and we just, it was hard. Yeah. So I apologize to all the Bagua practitioners and experts out there. We did our best. At least maybe we kind of opened the door for further investigation. I don't know, but I'm self-conscious about that one.
And that's not my specialty either.
But we tried. It was cool because it did have so much spiral and circular movement, and that really led to this the tornado type movements that Aang would do, and so that was cool. But we did end up borrowing some more kind of straightforward, much more linear movements from other disciplines a lot of times for Aang, just kind of out of necessity.
Some of the first sessions we did in terms of developing the martial arts, we kind of did in my backyard, right? Brian was asking me about, you know, what would the airbender do in this circumstance? And I ad-libbed a bunch of stuff, in terms of trying to create this fantasy magic and this evasive footwork.
You know, Tai Chi, Kisu very astutely thought that would be very good for water bending.
We were feeling our way in the dark.
Yeah, and I'm not a, of course, not a Tai Chi expert. And that one was the hardest one for me when we did do sequences in class, but this is a very layperson's explanation, but in a very water-like way, you I think in Tai Chi you rarely are planted. You are rarely sort of like all on one foot or all on the other, and so there's just this constant flow, and so that obviously poetically, you know, translates to water so well, and I think that's probably not lost on a lot of Tai Chi training and visualization. I mean, even in some movies I've watched, you know, some great stuff from Hong Kong cinema, they related.
And then with a child doing it.
Yeah, and get them started young.
It is a funny thing is when growing up, no one wanted, none of us wanted to study Tai Chi. That's the old people in the park doing Tai Chi. Like, we're not doing that. But then you talk to Tai Chi masters and they're like, you know, at the youth, you're going to probably get your butt kicked. But by the time you master it, you're going to be kicking everyone else's butt. I was like, oh. It only takes 50 years, only 50 years, but you're moving so slow.
I didn't want to learn it. And, when I did learn it, and when I was still competing at the time, and I'd go to these, you know, tournaments and be fighting, and found myself throwing people across the ring using, you know, ward off or, you know, redirecting an attack using rollback and then using press and knocking the guy off his feet again, I started to see the value of this. It's Tai Chi is really it's 13 moves for throwing someone across the room or slamming them down on the floor. It looks gentle, but it is, there's some really nasty stuff contained therein, and it translates across the entire martial art platform.
So that was a good one. And then for Earth, Kisu thought Hungar would be a good one to use as the main inspiration. And again, we peppered in, you know, some other influences. But kind of like Northern Shaolin, Hungar had very big kind of clear movements that I think translated well to animation. And so when we did, you know, these kind of deep stances and deep digging, you know, that really on a kind of like visceral level made people really think. And that was the thing. We didn't want it to be like, oh, this person can just levitate a giant boulder with their finger. You wanted to feel like they were somehow lifting it, you know, with their own physical strength, even if it was, you know, beyond something they could normally pick up. So, you know, again, that was the trying to keep it away from being too magic wand and being much more of a physical process. And then obviously we brought in Sifu Manny for a specialized style because we thought, oh, this would be cool if Toph has her own style. And Kisu, I had seen Manny do a demo at a martial arts tournament that I took part in as one of Kisu's students, and I was like, oh, that's a cool style. So we just had, you know, our character, Toph, blind, uses sonar and earthbending to see, and we brought Sifu Manny in, and that was the story Kisu was talking about. I didn't want anybody. I had seen Manny demo his martial art on someone, and I knew it was pretty brutal, so I volunteered, but I'm like a buck 25 soaking wet, you know, so I'm standing there, and there we have the bleachers in the Nick gym, and Manny does kind of Toph's signature like three finger kind of whiplash thing, and
the fingers,
yeah, he does that to my sternum and my chest. It was like someone hit a drum in the room. My chest made this very bizarre resonation. Just went boom, and all of the animation crew just like everybody gasped.
They thought he was gonna die.
Something else. I think I got kicked in the shin. Really, if you haven't seen Sifu Manny, he's about three times my size.
Yeah,
he's a big guy.
He's a big dude.
He looks like an earth. Bending yeah. master. That's what he looks
like.
So he
kicked my shin pretty good that day.
Wait, was all of this being videoed?
Pretty sure. It's on a hard drive.
Does that mean that in a hard drive that somehow we're going to have to get?
He earthbent your chest.
The scary thing was he was holding back. You know that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. This was demo level. But there was a really neat thing where he didn't know a ton about the character. You know, we these were episodes we were working on. Still, and when we told him about Toph, he was like, oh, the legend is that our style, you know, the origin story is that it was created by a blind woman. And we were like,
a blind nun, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. So more really cool synchronicities.
Serendipity. Yeah. Yeah.
And then lastly, for the main styles, is the style that Sifu Kisu did, you know, focus his training on was Northern Shaolin. And as I mentioned in the beginning, that was what led me to him. He can certainly speak to that style for fire.
That style has dictated the path of my entire adult life. I had no idea what I was getting into. I guess around the early 1900s, there was an effort towards standardization in China of the various martial arts. I think there's a huge competition in like 1917 of tens of thousands of participants. And out of that, there were 15 winners. And out of those 15, I think 10 of them were recruited to start this martial art institute at Nanjing, where they brought some of the major styles together, the Northern Shaolin, the Tai Chi, Bagua, and these famous masters. This was like before guns, you know, where your life depended on your ability to, you know, work a stick or swing a sword or you know, move your fist in a certain way. And so these guys came together and standardized all of these different styles and turned them into teachable systems, right? Because before that, you know, most teachers were illiterate. And so it was all word of mouth or done in drawings or that sort of thing. And they brought scholars in to catalog and detail this stuff. And out of those 15, 10 of those masters were known as the 10 tigers. More importantly, the 10 tigers who went south. They were sent all over China to train the militias in the different provinces. And so it's a very rich history. And then the style was made famous by great master Gu Yi Cheng. Or Guru Zhang, you can find these on the internet. You'll see pictures of him. I showed this to Brian, breaking a stack of 12 unspaced bricks. I mean, these legendary movements where he was reputed to be able to break any brick in the stack. Some of the rules of martial art are to resist durably and to hit forcibly, right? And so he practiced a technique called the golden bell, which we kind of played with it, the small golden bell, where he could resist a blow. There's pictures of him under a giant chunk of granite. If you don't know how heavy granite is, it's one of the most solid stones out there, with four students on top hugging each other. There's another one of a card rolling over his chest, and there's one of him bending iron around his forearm. This guy was, you know, like 5 feet tall and just a holy terror for the world, right? Oh my God, I get so excited about this stuff, my brain turns off.
It's amazing.
But it's a long, rich tradition.
We should probably also talk about the actual process of, you know, that we developed.
And, yes, please.
You know, it started on the test pilot, I remember we met out in that same courtyard where we had the Avatar premiere some years later. What we basically did was, once we got into production, the script would call for some action. Maybe it was martial, that, you know, characters might be fighting, or sometimes they were just using bending to do something. And even those cases where it wasn't a fight, we still wanted it to have some sort of some credence to it, you know, that there was some physicality to it that had its own logic. Again, we didn't want stuff to just kind of be magic wand stuff. So typically for each episode, there would be three martial arts consultation sessions. And the first one, it was really before the artist had drawn anything. They had the script and maybe they had done a few thumbnails, but it would be the director, the storyboard artists, and usually myself. We would communicate to Kisu what we were looking for. We need something like this. I was hoping it would kind of be something like this. Very often, this was communicated by me jumping around in a sort of, you know, like, I'm not a martial arts master, but I'm trying to communicate something like this, some sort of dynamic movement, you know, or I might have an idea, or the director or artist might have an idea. Mm-hmm. And then Kisu would give us some options. You know, he would respond, and this was all videotaped, and he would say, well, what about this move? What about this move? And kind of give us some options to work with. A couple weeks later, we would have the second session, which was kind of the meat of it, where the artist would come back, would have drawn some thumbnails, and would say, okay, that second move you did, and we'll play the clip. I need that, but I need it from this angle. And could you connect it with this punch or something? So the storyboard artists and the directors and myself were kind of doing the choreography, where we were sort of piecing this stuff together from the raw material that Kisu would give to us. And then he would like, okay, but I got to refine, you know, to get from that move to this move, I need to work out this step, or, you know, how about this? And so we would shoot it from the specific camera angle that the storyboard artist was drawing. So now we had specific reference from a pretty good angle. And then there was a third session if needed, where we would revise things or, you know, do whatever we didn't capture the first time around. So all of that footage would then be edited to the correct move that we did use from the correct angle. There were keyframes chosen to show the animators. This is the sort of start. We talked all about this, right? The start of the movement, the mechanics of it, you know, the breath, all of that stuff. And then all of those materials were sent along with the storyboards to give the animators some movement reference. Now, most of the time, this was not rotoscoped. If you don't know what that term is, that's where you trace live action footage. And it just, that's how you get your animation. There's a few where I'm like, oh, that's Kisu. Like, sometimes I can see that the animator, Kisu has very specific proportions. And there's sometimes where I'm just like, those are his hands. There's one in the prison in
the prison scene.
There's this one movement. I'm like, yep, that's just Kisu. That was That was rotoscoped. But for the most part, it was just drawing reference. You know, it was just layout reference and animation reference, and that was always the goal. You know, you wanted them to not trace it. You want them to reinterpret it and bring it into the animation sphere.
It was organic. It was fractal, the way this occurred. It was, I have very fond memories of these sessions. Brian would draw me out. If I would have just been directing this on my own, it wouldn't have been half as good. This guy, he knew what he wanted to see. And
I was kind of a curator, you know. I was not coming at it from an expert's point of view, but I was sort of like a music producer who's not a musician or a recording engineer, but, you know, can sit there and kind of direct the dynamics, you know. And then there was, you know, the point that we weren't making just people punching each other. Each fight we approached as a story. And we were always trying to break it down into three chunks, you know, like three act structure in any of the more sustained fights. And there was always some emotional thing behind it. And there was always some story thing. So these characters aren't just fighting because it's that time of the episode. We tried to make it that character A is trying to achieve something or trying to defend someone or is has their backs against the wall or something, and there's history there, and we talked a lot about what kinds of moves, like for, you know, season two, but like Azula, like how would she move? What would be different about her essence and her physicality? Mm. And so there were a lot of those discussions, you know, and a lot of jumping around, getting sweaty in the middle of the day and then having to go to some storyboard meeting or something, or getting injured. <you know. laughs>
When you started to get stuff back that was animated, did that inform decisions that you made in the future? Like, oh, that translated so well. That's something that we're going to kind of put into the quiver for upcoming stuff. And then was there stuff that kind of fell off naturally that was like, oh, this seemed like it made a lot of sense, but when we saw the way it was animated, it didn't quite translate?
The Bagua stuff, you know, it was not only was Bagua hard to draw, it just hard to translate. You know, there's like lateral movement and there's sagittal movement, you know, sideways, just kind of cardinal directions. Like that kind of thing is, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's something people can grasp. Drawing a human being in perspective is challenging enough, you know, and making them move around in a believable way is hard enough. Just doing pedestrian movement, getting this person to then do these martial geometries with their body and to show this physicality is even on these cardinal directions is a challenge. Now say, okay, this person needs to be walking in a spiral, you know, and like on a TV budget and then, ooh, changing direction. Unfortunately, that was really challenging. We tried a few times. I think that one, we started moving away from that because we just thought it's a great idea. It's a beautiful art, but I can't even do it physically. How are we going to get, you know, draw it? But the other thing was we were just always trying to raise the bar. You know, I think it was like, sure, we saw what might have worked, but it was, we just kept trying to do better scenes and cooler movements because we didn't want to just rehash the same stuff.
There were a couple of movements in Korra where we actually really got it well, like the swinging doors scene and some of the spirals that she was doing were just took my breath away.
I was trying to make up for our, you know, past shortcomings. I think we did better. I don't know that we knocked it out of the park, but that's lovely to hear. Thank you. But yeah, we, you know, and then we just had some other people join the crew later down down the line, you know, like Lauren Montgomery and Joaquim Dos Santos, and they kind of elevated everyone's game. You know, Joaquim in particular, he has trained martial arts for much of his life, and he's just a huge fan of action cinema and action animation. And he has really broken it down in terms of dynamics. So your question, Janet, about like figuring out what worked, it wasn't so much like this move or that move, but it was like ways of portraying these things, ways of framing them so they have the most impact. And so that they, in this medium of hand-drawn animation, they kind of have the best chance of communicating, you know, energy and strength and stuff. And then we have to point out the incredible effects animation. You know, we keep talking about the martial arts, which is obviously the main point here, but we were very lucky to work with people like UJM Young and many others who are some of the most incredible 2D effects animators. If you aren't aware, the idea of a travel show, which has new designs, new locations, new characters, almost every episode, where there are multiple action scenes in every episode, and where those action scenes include hand drawing water, fire, dust, and wind blowing people's hair and clothing. And
oh my gosh.
I have just come up with the recipe for the most unsustainable animated TV production. And the thing is, Mike and I knew better. We knew better, but that was the idea we came up with, and we thought, well, we'll just try to come up, you know, build a production around this. But I just want to point out those amazing animators that then made this stuff look cool and made the effects look really cool.
Well,
most of the time,
the behind the scenes interviews where you really get a sense of the animators and they were interviewed, and it's really wonderful. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to see it, but you really get the sense. I mean, they say that. I love how forthcoming they are about it. Like, there's a sense of sort of like, it was my favorite show, and it was also the show that
I mean, that's my experience.
That sounds familiar. That sounds like Mike and Brian talking.
Yeah,
exactly.
And also, with the martial arts and the fighting, I mean, you guys talk about anime, about Akira and Cowboy Bebop, but also, I mean, I was growing up, I was a big, you know, Kung Fu Theater fan.
Oh, yeah.
Like a big martial arts film fan. And using the martial arts and the comedy and, like, the perfect beats that just kind of, like, gave me the feels of, you know, Five Deadly Venom or, you know, Master Killer or, like, and there's, like, all these other elements that I felt as I'm watching the show.
Kisu and I, and especially in these early days when I was first training with him and we were developing the series, we were talking about films, you know, Hong Kong live action films, classic ones, Shaw Brothers stuff, the 90s stuff, which is my favorite. You know, I love the Jet Li. And
didn't we have a couple of movie days where we sat down and watched something?
I think with the crew, we'd watch, or with the other students, we would watch stuff. And you know, as I said early, I wanted this to be a Kung Fu series, not, oh, this is a show that sort of like references Kung Fu movies and quotes them, you know, quotes them visually. I wanted to get down to the source of that. So what I was doing in that summer of 2002 was, there was still a Blockbuster. It was right around the corner from my house that I had with Ben Nguyen, our future sound designer. And I would drive across LA through traffic to get to Kisu's backyard, a train, I'd come home, I would watch these classic Kung Fu films, I would frame by frame and draw, you know, the martial arts that they were doing so that I could learn these poses and these geometries and what the clothing would do and, you know, during these movements and, you know, Prodigal Son, that was one that you told me about that ended up being one of my favorite films.
Prodigal Son.
Sammo Hung stuff. I mean, that's my favorite stuff.
He is still
choreographing incredible
Master
stuff,
Killer.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know what's wild is, like, you know, I'm a hip hop kid, I'm a break dancer, and so we watched all these Kung Fu films, and we would, in the 80s, we would watch these films and we would incorporate them into how we would do our breakdancing. So there's certain moves that came from martial arts and
that's
vice versa.
Awesome.
And there was even some stuff Zuko did that I was like, that's so much like breakdancing. Like, from the floor up, that's like a move that we stole from Scorpion back.
Yeah,
we just
talked about that, in fact, with Jenny. Yeah,
yeah,
he's got that great, that during with the Suki fight.
During the Suki fight.
He does like full on from the ground.
And we stole
some kicking and stuff. I was like, that's breakdancing.
Yeah, we stole some stuff from these martial arts and these Kung Fu movies to do our breakdancing. But now, as I'm looking online, there's all these new kids just totally taking what you guys animated and bringing it into real life, whether they're trying the bending or incorporating into what they're doing. So many of the different disciplines that you guys drew, I'm seeing people doing it in real life and asking me to do certain things, like the dragon dance. It's like one of the biggest things. Can you do the dragon dance with me? And I'm like, let's get this, show me the video, let's try to get this down. But it's so wild to see how, you know, you get inspired, then you inspire the next generation. Everyone's kind of like repurposing everything that's going on. It's so amazing to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think nowadays, well, I know it's having a big resurgence with the sequel series, but like Karate Kid, for all that you can say about it, that inspired my generation of Western kids. That's why I ran out and signed up as a very young kid. I think it was in second or third grade.
Sweep the leg. Don't you sweep that leg. That is dirty fighting.
That's when I started. But, you know, it had that really big cultural impact. And we are obviously not the only, you know, series, and we're not the first, but it is neat. I have had through the years, as you all have said it from cons, you know, people who are either, you know, really serious about these martial arts, maybe trained them before they saw Avatar, but we're just so excited to see, again, we know we didn't always hit the mark, but what's been really touching is that instead, the feedback I get, or people are like, they just are so excited that to see an animation production try, and to really like try to work this stuff in, and they recognize those little bits, and I appreciate that there's usually that just an appreciation.
Yeah, I think as a martial arts fan, you know, even as just an Asian American, we love that you cared enough to approach it in this way, because we, you know, I grew up in Hollywood, you were in Hollywood, the bottom line is making the show, and there's a lot of important things, not just the martial arts and not just caring about the cultural significance. I mean, there are important things like story and characters and the arc, and all that is important. And at the bottom, at the end of the day, the studio just cares that you deliver the show, and other things can go to the wayside, which we've seen in a lot of series. But I think the audience just loves that you cared enough to approach it in this manner. And that's...
And you can feel that baked into every episode. You can, it's whether you know what they're not.
Can I talk about the Bending Bible?
Yeah.
The Bending Bible is this thing. It's about 5 or 6 inches thick of it, and it's all me demonstrating different poses, demonstrating different essences of movement. Right. Again, I mentioned it because it's to see the thing. It's an incredible compilation of the material and the time that we took to put into this thing.
Yeah, I bet that is kind of that a different way to represent that work. Like you probably, when as it was being compiled, it was like, it's just, well, it's getting bigger. Like, I guess we have a lot of references as it's growing and growing, as another way of sort of having the perspective of like, wow, we really did this.
There's a lot of movement.
There was a problem with cherry picking from that volume, what we were going to use and what we weren't going to use.
Wonder if it's out. It's got to be out there somewhere. I mean, I'm starting to imagine this sort of Indiana Jones-esque, like, just temple of stuff that we can go in and just raid and plunder and
can't have it. It's all
that's probably not the case.
Yeah, in our secret archives.
Oh, the archives!
Since we're not all benders all the time here, can you guys touch a little bit on the fighting styles, or how you guys approach the fighters that weren't benders, like Sokka, Suki, Ty Lee, Mei?
Ooh.
Did you guys have a different philosophy in how you approach their fighting styles?
Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, There were definitely similar conversations, but much more specific. You know, like Mike and I were introduced to that from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know, where these pressure points were hit and the characters were sort of rendered temporarily paralyzed. So,
it's
yeah,
terrifying.
That was a direct, you know, idea from there. And we just brought that to Kisu and talked about, you know, we didn't want it to just be punches, obviously. It's more of hitting these points. So we would present that to him, and he would reach into his deep bag of martial arts knowledge and come up with some cool stuff. And, you know, it was a challenge because, especially on the first series, you know, the mandate from the network was action without violence. And here we have people shooting fire at each other's heads and chucking rocks at each other. That was a little more fantastical. We could explain it like it's like two That's people intense. Fighting, but we pull them apart and the elements are in between. When it came to something like Sokka, I mean, he just does a spinning heel kick and just clocks a pirate in the head, you know, and like it was kind of funny. So we sort of got away with that stuff if it was a little bit funny.
And they're pirates. They're pirates.
With, you know, the Kyoshi Warriors, that was a Tai Chi fan.
Oh. Amazing.
Set that we were referencing. I don't know that we stuck to it too close.
Well, we could talk to you guys forever, obviously, but I know that we should start to wrap things up. But before we do, I know that we would be in a lot of trouble with the fans if we didn't ask Kisu a couple of key questions. I think we've got a little bit of an answer, perhaps, with finding out what you were most expert coming into the show in doing, and a thing that's only feeding Dante's Fire Nation ego yet further.
No egos in the Fire Nation. No egos in the Fire Nation.
Is that the kind of bender that you would be?
Oh, well, I definitely Fire Nation. Zuko is my hero.
I know, but I would argue, Kisu, you're one of the only people that I could say this to. You would probably be an Avatar. I mean, hands down, you helped develop the styles. You, out of anyone else we would talk to in this podcast, Janet, I think...
You would be allowed to say that. You would be allowed to say, why do I have to choose?
I would be the Avatar. I would be an
That's
Avatar.
That's a great point, Dante.
Thank you.
Well, you know, part of the reason why I chose some of the styles that I did were people that scared me. My Hungar brothers, there's a big guy, Don Hamby. Brian met him a couple of times. Don is this
I got to see him at that same... Yeah, at that same tournament, I saw him do a demo.
Yeah. And he's got arms as big as my thigh. And this guy would, I mean, crush you. And, you know, I picked styles that I really respected that were, you know, sub elements in our curriculum. I can't say I'm an expert at anything, but I practice every day. You know, since I left Avatar, I still, you know, teach a class here and there. I'm up in Colorado now, and I've got a small group here, and bringing some of my wisdom and experience to that.
Yes, I met some of those students. That's awesome.
Oh, this has been such a treat. Anything that people need to know, be aware of, looking out for you in the world of social media, anything like that?
Oh, I've got a couple of things out there. My Sifu Kisu of the Harmonious Fist is up on Facebook somewhere. And I've got an Instagram, Lokhopkuen, Lokhopkuen.
Thank you so much for having us. It was really fun.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Keese and I met 19 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And craziness. It's been a journey. And it's just, you know, Dante, you talked about, like, you could tell that we cared about the martial arts. And Mike and I would often look at each other in the middle of, some production nightmare or some really late night doing retakes. And we would just say, you know, if we didn't care so much, we could just go home. You know, it was like no one was forcing us to do that, but we really did care. And we were lucky to find a bunch of other really talented, dedicated people who cared as much as we did. And so everyone's passion for this really resulted in some amazing animation and stories. And even if I'm still self-conscious and hypercritical of all of it, I am very proud of it.
Brother, you changed the world with this thing. I can't tell you. I'm so grateful and so thankful to have been a part of this and to be your friend. I really appreciate you.
Well, likewise. Thank you so much.
Well, this has been such an amazing episode. I know I'm not alone in saying so. I cannot wait for everyone to hear this. Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you, Kisu. Looking ahead, everyone will be recapping episode 107 next week, The Winter Solstice, Part 1.
And we'll see everybody next Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.